Today we will hear a talk on steps 6 and 7. We're in 6, entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. So please help me give a warm welcome to Elizabeth BL from Louisville, Kentucky. Come on
in. Thank you so much, Sunny. My name is Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since January 3rd, 1988, 36 years this year. And steps 6 and 7, you know, I can't look at these without looking at the first 5 steps. You know, what am I here to do and why am I doing it? Why do I care about my defects? And I just reviewed the 12 and 12, what it says about these steps. And I love what it says in step 7. You know, when I first came here, I didn't know if I was an alcoholic. And it took me really looking at the truth. You know, I remember the first time somebody had me write about an inventory of my drinking. And I was shocked because I did my best to ignore how much I was drinking. You know, I always had excuses for why trouble happened or the consequences that I suffered. And I'm really good at ignoring things. And I'm one of those people that I realized this recently, that if I think I have all the answers, then I'm never going to ask any questions. I don't even know there's a problem. And I think a lot about that quote in the doctor's opinion, our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And my sponsor told me people get sober and then they keep doing the things that are comfortable and that work for them until they don't work anymore. And that's what this is about, because you know, I had somebody recently say, well, I've already gone through the steps, but I'm having all these issues now. And she's right around 2 years sober. I said, well, exactly, right? Because first I look at this on my drinking. I go through this stuff. I look at my history. I look at the past. I look at all the messes I made. But doing it again after trying to live sober and use these tools is a whole different deal. You know, and a lot of people really emphasize staying in 10, 11, and 12. And some people talk about going back through and doing all the steps again. And I love the instructions for all the steps. So I've always done that. It took me a long time to understand how I could do that and just kind of hang out in step 10, 11, and 12. But that took a while. And I realized that anything that I do that works, if I think it's working, I don't know it's wrong. We were joking about that before the meeting. You know, I'm one of those people who likes to help others. You know, I'm a caretaker. I'm going to rescue you. I'm going to step into your situation and make it better for you. I've gotten myself into so much trouble doing that. And I can't understand why anyone's mad. Why are you mad? You know, and that's that alcoholic self-centeredness. I can't see. I have this blindness to other people and their experience. And what's really cool, and I just found this out before the meeting, because I haven't read it in a really long time, is that in step 7, in the 12 and 12, you know, it talks about that it takes effort for me to watch out for these things. It doesn't happen naturally for me to notice, because to me, it's normal. I have to work to pay attention to your experience of me. I don't notice it. I also have ADD, diagnosed in 2008. I am medicated, but sometimes it wears off and it's late in the day and I've interrupted you 15 times and you're frustrated with me and you don't like me because of it. It really does take effort. So it's not just the alcoholic self-centeredness, but that can create an other's blindness as well. And I'm not a jerk. I'm just trying to be okay. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't even know, you know, until someone has the willingness to tell me. And I've gone through so many things, you know, that finally woke me up to some things that I was doing. Like, for example, being the crusader in other people's lives. You know, I stepped into a situation that was so not my business and it blew up in my face. And I could have never seen the outcome that happened in that. And someone said to me, Elizabeth, why did you think it was your business to get involved in that? I had never asked myself that question. It never occurred to me that it was a problem until the consequences happened. Doesn't that sound familiar? Just like with drinking. It didn't ever occur to me to look at whether or not I had a drinking problem until the consequences happened. And I'm getting kicked out of schools and I'm waking up and I don't know where I am. And my car's wrecked and I don't even know if I wrecked it, you know, and there's things going on that are a problem now. It's the same thing with defects. And I love how they talk about, you know, the big ones fall away pretty quickly, but some of them hang in there. And I get these lessons that come back to me over and over. Like, I have an issue with bullies. Some of you have heard me tell my story. I was bullied as a child for my mom, my sister, kids at school. And so I have a real issue with bullies. I don't want to deal with them. I don't want to be nice to them when I'm, you know, I'm in AA situations now where I'm in service and I got to deal with these people that are kicking me under the table, you know, as a lot of, especially our nice, sensitive newcomers can get pissed off and kick you under the table and stuff like that. And my role now is to be helpful and useful and help and be caring of them and tolerant and loving, and not just tolerant, but loving. And really try to embrace the principles of this program. And just like it says, and it's really funny because it goes into it in step 7 and the 12 and 12, I don't want to do it. I mean, I fight it and I see it. And sometimes I feel like my disease and my recovery are neck and neck horses in a horse race. But, you know, because it's like, it feels like, you know, that 0 to 60, it's like that switch. I think about that. We stood at the turning point in one part. You know, when I go with God and I say to my higher power, I need your help with this, which is what this is all about. And I can, and it actually works. That's the thing I didn't know. I came from a therapy background. I got sober at a time when people were reading self-help books. If you read the big book, maybe you did it once. Maybe you did somebody's step study. Somebody had a printout from somebody's treatment center. There were places that they read the big book that I heard about, but I wasn't going to those meetings. So I was one of those that, you know, thought that we were supposed to work on our defects, you know? You know what that does? It makes me more selfish and self-centered because now I'm focusing on myself and my problems all the time. I'm so blind to you. I don't even know what's going on, you know? So that just gives me better language to use too. You know, I'm setting boundaries. Yeah, setting boundaries is telling other people how to act, right? They might, you know, I have good friends that I've talked to about, Rob knows there's certain music I can't hear between 1974 and 1979, and I ask him if he'll turn it off. Usually it's in the car, and I can't really get out of the car easily at that point, so he's willing to do that, and that's nice. If he wasn't, maybe, you know, but it's about changing me. I'm the one that has the deadly disease. And one of the things I didn't even know was in here, it says on page 73 of the 12 and 12, we reluctantly come to grips with those serious character flaws which made problem drinkers of us in the first place, flaws which must be dealt with to prevent a retreat into alcoholism once again. So if I'm running around playing God, which I'm a God player, and I'm trying to say what you need to do and what I need to do and how I need to change and how you need to change and how my job needs to go and what my weight needs to be and how my daughter needs to act. You know, at some point, I'm going to get upset. I'm going to be thinking about the future and the past, get into anxiety, depression, you know, morbid reflection, all the stuff the book tells us. And at some point, I'm going to need relief from a drink again because I'm not cured and it's out there, you know. And I've found in, you know, all this time that for me, I have a less of a tolerance for pain, not a greater tolerance for pain. And I remember the first time I read the statement somewhere there in there about that we see character building as the goal, not for a reason, but just to do it, to live these principles that we learn in AA. And I still, there's so funny. I'll tell you another story. I had an experience with this woman and she was really driving me crazy and she was doing things and it was really hurtful to me. And I go to some other women for some feedback about what to do. And the first few women said, well, it sounds like she has outside issues. You don't have to deal with her. And my ego was like, yes, that's a great answer. I don't want to deal with her. Thank you so much for that feedback. And then I go to my friend, Texas T. She's, if you've heard her speak, she's amazing. And she said, it sounds like that woman wants your friendship and approval. Have you thought about giving her everything she wants? And I'm telling you what, I don't even want to tell you the words I thought that came into my brain, right? But it started with the letter F, okay? And it was not, I was not happy. My ego's like, I don't want to do that. What are you talking about? Can I pretend I didn't have this call? All this stuff running through my head immediately, But then I knew she's right. She's right. Because this is 100% deal. And I did. I thought, how long can I get away with acting mean towards this woman and not drink? It actually crossed my mind. Is this something I need to change? Is this something I need to do? Do I need to get help with this? But really, I settled into the idea that my trusted friend, who gave me some good feedback and really solid in the literature, right? She was correct. And you know what happened? My heart softened towards the woman. And then another amazing thing happened. God took her out of my life. She just vanished. She just started going to different places. And what was really funny about that is I see that happen. When I get right with the principles of AA and I try to live and follow these things and talk to God, things change, things happen, One time, well, I know I'm going to tell that story. I've just seen these examples over and over again that when I get right with God, beautiful things happen. Things are either made easier. It's all in the book too. I'm given the power to handle it, or it goes away. Something happens. And the funny thing is I'm speaking at a meeting where she's supposed to be on Wednesday. And I don't know if she'll be there. Or God will give me the power to handle it. I don't know. And I can trust that. But when I first realized that she was part of that group, I wanted to cancel. I was like, I want to cancel. I don't want to go there. It's like, no, you're going to trust God because that's what this whole deal is about. And I'm never going to be perfect. And I know that. And sometimes one of the things that I really love is how much he talks about humility. This isn't about me anymore. I'm who I am. I'm Elizabeth. I'm doing the best I can. I'm not on a spiritual mountaintop over here. I'm still learning just like everybody else. I've had a lot of painful ego deaths, and I really have been humbled. I found out how much my ADD interrupting people was pushing people away from me, and that was painful to know. So what have I done? I've asked God for help and I've done my best to do better. But the people who aren't going to tolerate me, that they're just not going to be in my, I can't control that. I can do my best. And if someone doesn't want to be around me because of it, all I can, other people with ADD, we get along great. We just interrupt each other the whole time and it's awesome. Like we both go, it's true. It's true. It's very fun. You just kind of you can run all over the place and back to the original topic. And I don't know if you know people like this, but it's really not about me. And if that means it sends them away, it means they're just supposed to go hang out with somebody else. I don't have a relationship with my siblings. And that used to really, really bother me. I would wake up and think about it. They're both drinking. And one day I realized that if I was spending time with my siblings, I might miss out on spending time helping people in AA. That's a lot of my life today. I don't have a job. I have financial security, and so and my kids are mostly grown, so I get to spend a lot of time in AA today. And this is the part of the humility that I get right sized, and I realize that God has a plan for me that may not be the plan that I had for myself. And the first time I realized that was when I saw how alcoholism had detoured my life. I didn't go to the college I was supposed to go to. I didn't get the job I was supposed to get, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't regret it. At the time, I did. At the time, I was upset. But later on, I saw, and I know people who followed their life script that was like mine, and went to the college and got that job and married that person and joined that club. And I know that was never me. That was never me. So many times, I just love all the words in the big book about humility and being right-sized and trusting my higher power is going to lead me to where I'm supposed to go. And even with my defects, even if I've done something. And the cool thing about, after we do this, we go make amends. When I see my part and I can go make amends. Boy, does that take a lot of trust and higher power, you know, and it really does too. But what happens is when I humble myself, when I'm vulnerable, when I show you the truth about me, then that makes a connection with another person because then they can come in and be real with you too. It gives them the strength to be real. But I'm not one to sit around with 7 pages of character defects. One time, my sponsor, she gets excited about printouts that she finds on the internet, you know? And so I go back through the work with her every now and then. And one of the times I did it, I'd gotten done with my fifth step. And I hadn't done that kind of really formal inventory in a little while. And I forgot how awful that is. Like, first you have to write it down and then you have to read it to somebody, you know? And some of the stuff I really didn't want to admit to, you know, ugly stuff about me. And then after that, she sent me this like 7-page, 5-column thing. Here's a bunch of defects. Why don't you write on these? And I said, wait a minute, I just did a bunch of work, really. And then she said, no, it's okay. I get it. You did do a lot of work. But it's funny, you know, it does help. But I really do think that until I'm ready to see something, I'm just not gonna see it. I even like, you know, I was talking to somebody today about I love the brilliance. The big book between pages 60 to 63. And that's about how I'm playing God, which I already talked about. You know, I know what you need to do, what I need to do, how that needs to go. But, you know, for a long time, I didn't think that applied to me because I'm not a retired businessman sitting in the Florida sunshine complaining about the state of the nation. Like, I can separate myself from anything if I'm not ready to see it. And when they talk about became entirely ready, it takes pain. And it talks about that in the step in the big book. It takes pain. You know, I have to hit that wall. Because again, if something's working, my sponsor says you get sober, but if something works for you, people are going to keep on doing it until it doesn't work anymore. And I see people come into AA, and it seems like there's generally two types of people. You got the caretakers and the helpless people. So you got the people that are out there playing God and the people who need the people that are playing God. And we have a role to play with each other, you know? I don't get the helpless people coming to me. I get the God players, and I'm always waiting to see when that moment comes. How's she a God player? It's coming, you know? And it's hard because that was a learned response to my childhood. I was like a little adult, probably by age 5. I had to take care of myself and my sister. I had to figure things out. There wasn't a lot of guidance or parenting going on. They were a little busy with their parties and dinner parties and things. And now it's, you know, it's really hit me this past year how much in my life I thought I had the answer, so I never asked the questions. I've learned to start to run things past people more than I used to. Especially getting in an AA service is hard. You're dealing with a lot of people at a lot of different places in their recovery. And it's sort of like compartmentalizing. When I was, you know, as a parent, I learned how to compartmentalize and put my stuff aside and really and be there to serve and do things. But it's hard. And thank God for those closed-mouth friends that you can call. Some of you are in this room, and you can just vent your feelings about stuff. You know, I call that column 2 ranting because, you know, column 2 and the 4 steps where you get to talk about what they did, you know, what they're doing to me. But I know I can't stay there. And my friends that I talk to that have welcomed that, and I welcome that. You know, you can call and tell me anytime you're struggling. Just call and tell me about it. That part of me sometimes needs to be heard, but then I need to move on, you know, and really decide, is this program. Do I need this program? And what is this program telling me to do? And even when I don't like it, you know, like that thing about giving that woman everything she wants, like I know I've gotten to a place where I know this is life and death. I've seen people go back out. I've seen people stay in their ego. I've seen them not be willing to take feedback. And I don't want to be one of them. Even though I swear to God, sometimes, you know, Like I said, I laugh at that part of me now that goes, I don't want to do that. No. How long can I get away with not doing that? I'm like, I know, honey. I feel the same way, but I look at all the evidence that God hasn't dropped me on my head so far. How many times have I had to trust my higher power and it all went fine, whatever it was? And I didn't have to stay in that strong, I'm going to push you away so you don't hurt me. That character that I built to deal with my life. And just jump off and say, okay, here you go, God. Show me what you want me to do. And I'm here. And I'm going to show up. I'm going to suit up and show up like I'm told and stay humble and realize it's not about me. It's not about me anymore. And how great we get to be part of something bigger. Because if it stays about me, I'm not going to get well. I'm not going to get better. I've been talking a lot more about the traditions with new people after not doing that for a while and realizing how bad that can create situations. And one of it is that I join a group and now it's not always about me, it's about the group. I'm part of something bigger. And it is up to me. The responsibility statement that AA is in our hands. And that requires a lot of humility. But I'm not one of those. I don't know. I like the set aside hour. What is it? We take the book down from the shelf and we sit for an hour. But I don't, I do this a lot in step 10. We continue to look for this stuff. I know what I have to look for, and I have to actively look for it because otherwise I'm not going to see it. I have to do the work and self-sacrifice. It says on 14 and 15 that I have to keep on doing that. And that self, boy, she comes right back. She's like, no, I got another way to do things. I'm here, right here, ready to take charge again. All the time. I'm like, no, all right, God. I'm talking to God again, back with God. Hey, what's going on? Thank you for thank you for your work over there, honey. But we are on a different path now. Anyway, I don't know what more to say, you guys. I really was amazed when I looked at step 7 and the 12 and 12 again and realized how much some of these things I've only seen in the past few years, really in the past few years, because I've faced more and more situations where my ego was bruised and I needed to look at what was happening and felt the pain and the willingness to change, Yeah, how much time do I have left? 5 minutes? All right, I'll tell you a quick story. One of the first times that I realized there was a big, big problem with Elizabeth was when I got married and my husband's in the room. And I haven't told the story in a while, but I had spent the previous, I don't know, 20 years just with children. Okay, so it was Elizabeth and three kids. So I was the boss of the house. We had all these little rules. Okay, we used the white rags to clean the kitchen, the colored towels are to dry your hands. And the middle kitchen island counter was for papers, not food, right? All these rules. And Rob moves into my house. And about a month into living with me, he comes and sits in this chair I'm sitting in right now. And he looks at me across the room and he said, I don't even know where I'm allowed to sit down in this house. And I felt so bad, I felt so bad. I didn't even realize there was a problem. And he's probably down there like, I don't even know which towel to use for what, in the kitchen. And it's so funny the way God works because he brings me this stuff. Like, and I'm also one of those people that can be really critical in my demands. I can be like a bulldog. I'm coming after you. You better do this and you better do that because you're showing me disrespect and you better. And he is a real sensitive guy and a real caring and I realized that my way of doing things was hurting him. And I didn't want to hurt him. And it kept pushing me back to the work really hard, really looking at what I was doing and looking at that 60 to 63 and where my defects were showing up in my relationship. And thank God, that I mean, just so many opportunities have come my way now. learning that people didn't want to be my friend because I take all the air in the room sometimes, you know, interrupting people or whatever, talking too much. And I don't want to be that person. You know, that's really painful. Those things are painful to look at. And it says on page 25, none of us liked, you know, the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, that this process requires for its successful consummation. And like I said a little while ago, I feel like my disease sometimes and my recovery are both running neck and neck, like two horses in a race, and I can pick which horse I'm going to be on. I see the other horse, and it, sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm not on the right horse. But it does come down to that decision. Have I chosen this as a way of life or not? Do I believe this will work for me? Yes. So I'm willing to do what it takes. And then God always surprises me and great things happen. But I never think they're going to. Every single time. I doubt it, you know. But it does. Every time. My heart softens. You know, people who I think are going to be mean to me or nice to me. You know, as long as I just ask God for help. It actually happens that way. But I never think it's going to. Anyway, that's it. Thank you so much. And I hope somebody got helped here.